Well, we are continuing our series on the book of Daniel today, and the question that we're kind of letting hang out there in the background as we read this book is this: how can we keep the faith in a context that doesn't value our faith? Or how can we live submitted to Christ as king when we live in a nation that's not submitted to Christ as king? Well, this was very much, you know, the experience of Daniel and his friends having to wrestle with these questions. And today we're going to look at another story in which our main characters have to answer the question about what faithful living looks like under challenging circumstances. Actually, today I'm going to do something a little bit different. Instead of just telling you one story, I'm going to tell you two stories. Stories separated by about 2,600 years. The first set in Babylonian history. The second is part of Canadian history. So if you have your Bible, I'll invite you to turn to Daniel chapter 3. And, you know, it's such a great and rich story. We're just going to read the whole thing together. So here we go. Story number one. The setting is the 6th century before Christ. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, the prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image that he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and peoples of every language, this is what you're commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and peoples of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "May the king live forever. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn and flute and zither and lyre and harp and pipe and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold that you've set up." Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold that I've set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn and flute and zither and lyre and harp and pipe and all kinds of music, if you're ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, "King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the god we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you've set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude towards them changed. He ordered that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes and trousers and turbans and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't there three men that were tied up and thrown into the fire? They replied, certainly, Your Majesty. He said, look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the burning furnace and shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps and prefects and governors and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched. There was no smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way. And then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Story number two. The date, December 28th, 1942. Sam Martin was working in the garage that was owned by his brother Fred in Duchess, Alberta, when he received a call to report for military training. Sam, a member of a Mennonite church with a strong peace stance, applied for conscientious objector status. And he expected to go to an alternative service work camp, as several of his brothers had done. However, the board that reviewed his application rejected it, though they granted him a year extension before he needed to enlist. Well, the year came and went, and as expected, the call to join the army came again. When Sam, who stated once again that he was a conscientious objector, didn't show up for his training, the police were dispatched to arrest him. Sam was handcuffed. They led him across town to the train station, where he was loaded onto a train and remained shackled for the journey to Calgary and then on to Lethbridge, where he was to serve out his 30-day sentence. Sam was grateful to be assigned one of the better jobs in the prison. He was responsible for the one-horse cart that hauled garbage away, that brought ice blocks to the guards' houses and did various other chores. At the end of that month, Sam was taken to the army barracks in Calgary, where he was handed over to the army and forcibly enrolled. After being put through a battery of tests, Sam was told that he qualified to become an officer in the army, but he replied that he wasn't interested. Then came the test that proved, both simplest on the surface and yet most profoundly difficult. He was issued a soldier's uniform and was ordered to put it on. He refused. As punishment, Sam was sentenced to 28 days in the Currie Barracks outside of Calgary. Upon arriving at the barracks, the sergeant major snarled at Sam, "You will wear a uniform. I'm in charge here, and there has never been any person under my control who I've not been able to break. Take off your civilian clothes and put on an army uniform or go naked." "Sir," Sam replied quietly, "I refuse to serve the army. I'm a conscientious objector, and I will not wear the uniform." Obediently, he took off all his clothes except his underwear and was put in solitary confinement. His cell was 7 feet by 5 feet. He was given a cyclical diet, 3 days on bread and water, followed by 3 days of regular food. His cell was brightly lit 24 hours a day. He had a bucket for a toilet. There was no bed. At night, he'd be given a few blankets. When the guards noticed that none of these things persuaded Sam to put on the military uniform, they even resorted to shutting off the heat in his cell. At the end of the 28 days, Sam was taken back to the barracks in Calgary, forcibly put into an army uniform. Quietly, he removed the uniform and donned army overalls instead. The result? Another sentence of 28 days to be served in the prison he had just been released from. Once again, he was placed in solitary confinement. This time, for the first 3 weeks, he was given only bread and water, and once a day porridge, which was so unpalatable that he could hardly eat it. Again, he wore nothing but his underwear. He was given blankets at 10 p.m. They were taken from him at 6 a.m. On day 21, an unexpected blessing came. A guard came to Sam's door and tossed a pile of 45 letters on the floor from friends and loved ones. The guard said he had 15 minutes to read them, but in the end, didn't actually come back to collect them for a couple days. Joy and hope began to return to Sam as he read the letters, and he was further bolstered by being put back on a regular diet for the remaining week. Well, at the end of the sentence, once again, Sam was taken to the barracks in Calgary. Once again, he refused to put on the army uniform. But this time, instead of 28 days, the news was worse. Sam was sentenced to 90 days imprisonment. Once again, Sam found himself in solitary confinement, a diet of bread and water. Discouraged and dejected, Sam began to wonder whether he had been too adamant about his stance not to wear an army uniform. But when he went back to his Bible, he'd read verses like Matthew 5, 43 and 44, where Jesus says, "You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven." And when he read that, he couldn't reconcile it with going to war. And so verses like Job 13, 15 became scriptures that he took comfort in. "Though he slay me, yet I will trust him." Each morning, Sam was given a shower and was made to scrub the floor of his cell and the area outside his cell. And three times a day, he was taken to the kitchen to pick up three slices of bread. Except for those occasions, Sam was always locked up in his cell. In the cell across the hall from Sam was a 16-year-old boy who had lied about his age to get into the army, and then, after induction, decided he didn't like it and ran away, only to be caught and sent to prison. Sam engaged in discussions about the Bible with the boy, the two of them lying on their stomachs in order to be able to whisper back and forth through the 2-inch gap at the bottom of their cell doors. Well, a petition was signed and circulated on behalf of Sam, and it led to him finally being granted the privilege of a pastoral visit. The pastor who came was told he could only give spiritual guidance to Sam. He was not to share any advice. He was not to share any other information. At the end of the visit, the pastor asked the guard if he could pray with Sam. The guard agreed, but then walked away out of embarrassment. The pastor proceeded to pray, being sure to include in his prayer all the community news he knew Sam would be encouraged to hear. 49 days into his solitary confinement, living on bread and water and being afforded no clothes or heat, a doctor saw Sam and told the commanding officer that something had to be done as Sam's health was becoming precarious. As a result, Sam was transferred to the Lethbridge Provincial Jail. Now, at first, the indications were that this wouldn't be any easier on Sam. In his weakened state, he was immediately put to work with the other prisoners, hoeing sugar beets. As he was berated by the officer in charge and told he better keep up with the others, Sam tried his best. But he worked so hard that his fingers began to bleed badly, making the hoe so slippery that he couldn't use it properly. Sam was sure that he was going to be punished for not meeting the work requirements. Instead, the deputy warden reassigned Sam to the one-horse cart, which he had previously operated way back at the start of his ordeal. Sam couldn't believe it. Instead of punishment, he was given the best task he would have imagined. 1 Corinthians came to mind for Sam. "God keeps faith and will not allow you to be tested above that which you can bear. When the test comes, he'll provide a way out by enabling you to sustain it." When his 90-day sentence was finished, Sam went back to the barracks in Calgary, where he again refused to put on an army uniform and was again charged with disobeying a command. While in the guardhouse awaiting sentencing, Sam was told that the guardhouse sergeant had been the individual who had stolen his personal money on a previous occasion. The commanding officer urged Sam to lay charges so that the sergeant would be sent to prison for his actions. Sam replied, "I've just come from jail. I have no desire to put someone else there." Sam refused to press charges and instead forgave the sergeant. When a sentence was finally handed down for once again refusing to don a military uniform, Sam was given 18 months in the Lethbridge jail with hard labor. Yet somehow when he arrived, it seemed the hard labor stipulation was missing from the paperwork. Sam, however, didn't want to just sit around and told the warden that he'd like to do some kind of work if there was the chance. He was afforded the opportunity and turned out to be a great help in a number of different tasks, from farming to fixing cars. Early in November 1945, after serving two-thirds of his 18-month sentence, Sam's prison sentence was remitted. He was transferred back to the Army barracks in Calgary. Seeing Sam show up again, the commanding officer exclaimed, "What am I supposed to do with you now?" Sam suggested a six-month industrial leave to go back to his brother's garage and work there. The commander agreed, and his leave was granted immediately. 3 months later, Sam received a full discharge from the military. While there was a note on his discharge saying 23 months of non-effective service, he actually received an honorable discharge, and his ordeal was finally over. Two stories, nearly 2,600 years apart. But both examples of people who could not, in good conscience, go along with what government or society expected of them. Both stories of those who were willing to face whatever consequences might be associated with doing the right thing. Now, some might look at the biblical story, the story of these three men, and think, what's the big deal? Like, why not just bow down like everyone else and not make a fuss? After all, you don't have to really mean it in your heart. Like, is it worth being killed over? But for these men, it was. They could not, in good conscience, follow the king's order. It's not that they wanted to die, but they didn't shirk death either. They had resolved that they would not betray God, even in light of the very real possibility that they might die for their stand. Some may hear the story of Sam Martin's and think he took it too far. No doubt there are some who would disagree to the point of thinking Sam was actually in the wrong. And yet, he was following the faithful teaching of his church. Still to this day, our own MB Confession of Faith says this, says, "We seek to be agents of reconciliation in all relationships, to practice love of enemies as taught by Christ, to be peacemakers in all situations. We view violence in its many different forms as contradictory to the new nature of the Christian. We believe that the evil and inhumane nature of violence is contrary to the gospel of love and peace. And in times of national conscription or war, we believe we are called to give alternative service where possible." Sam Martin's resonated so deeply with this idea that this biblical truth represented the heart of God, that he was willing to receive whatever punishment might result from holding fast to it. What about us? I mean, can we find ourselves anywhere in these stories? Do we hold convictions about the kind of values God wants us to embrace? Not just embrace, but actually live out? I mean, do we hold them to the point that we'd be willing to suffer in order to stay true to them? What things would you be willing to give your life for? Like, if you were asked to make a list right now of the things that you wouldn't compromise on, even if it cost you your freedom or your life, could you make that list? You have clarity about the things that fundamentally matter to you because you're convinced they matter to God. Or, once again, has our rather comfortable place in society made us a bit spiritually out of shape, if you will? We haven't been forced to give much thought to the question in the way that Daniel's three friends had to think about it when ordered to bow down before a statue, or like Sam had to think about it when ordered to go to war. And yet I think we live in a society that is becoming increasingly hostile to our faith. It seems to me that it's not all that long ago that being a Christian was not only acceptable, it even actually seemed to carry some positive value in our broader society. More and more, however, it seems that society is increasingly hostile towards and increasingly less tolerant of Christianity. And if things carry on this way, we'll have to decide whether or not we're going to just go along and blend in, or whether we're going to stand out. I think it's more likely, not less likely, that as we move into the future, we'll be forced to think much more clearly about what we think matters to God and therefore must matter to us. And we're going to have to decide how far we'll go to hold on to those convictions. I'd suggest the best time to sort some of that out is before the time comes, rather than when we're in the middle of it. I think that Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Sam were men who would have identified with the cry of Peter when he said in Acts, "We must obey God rather than men." They're people who would have understood what Jesus meant when he said, "Do not be afraid of those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell." These were men intent on honoring God regardless of whether God fixed their immediate troubles in return. See, discipleship isn't a reciprocal arrangement. I'll scratch God's back if he'll scratch mine. No, true discipleship understands that God doesn't always come to the rescue in the temporal things. And that's okay. We have his promise that he will in the long run. And that's what matters. The question that kicks off the whole series of events in the book of Job is essentially the adversary coming to God and saying, you know, does Job only honor you because of the blessings you give him? And should he find calamity coming knocking at his door, would he stop honoring you or not? If we find calamity knocking at our door, will we still honor God? One other thought to consider. Our willingness to stand for what is right, even in the face of personal cost, isn't necessarily just about us. Sometimes doing so can have great impact on those who witness our choice to stand by godly convictions. No doubt King Nebuchadnezzar was a bit of a fickle guy, but in this moment anyhow, the decision made by these three men to stand by their convictions, even in the face of death, had an impact on him. He went from commanding worship of this image to giving praise to God and commanding that no one dare speak a word against the God of these men. It's quite a change. And what of the story of Sam Martin? Well, my grandfather, David Nicol, was another man who had been conscripted by the Canadian Army for service during World War II. He too was a conscientious objector, and as a result was arrested and sent to the barracks in Calgary. And in a memorandum written to MCC Canada, he later reflected on his experience at the barracks there with these words. "The sergeant who was responsible for me tried very hard to persuade me to go willingly. At the end of the conversation, he told me about a young man who refused to put on his uniform. He was in a stone cell, rationed to bread and water, and his health was being ruined. The sergeant used this to try to intimidate me. However, the knowledge that someone else was willing to suffer for his faith gave me strength in my desire to live by my convictions. My decision to be willing to suffer was made. For this, I give honor to the Lord. By nothing short of a miracle, I received a permanent discharge. This young man who the sergeant was telling me about turned out to be none other than Sam Martin." The lesson? Never underestimate the power of your example when you choose to stay true to your convictions. Who knows how God might honor that act of faithfulness and use it powerfully in the hearts of those who are watching the testimony of your life for His glory and honor.